So I was up till 3 a.m. thinking about this, and what I am seeing, I'm just seeing very, very bad things happen in our culture. And that's what I want to talk about on this episode of The Leadersmith.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
So I've been wrestling with what is going on in our culture, in our society, and I'm trying to make sense of various perspectives. I believe that black people are made in the image of God, Genesis 1:27. They have inherent dignity and worth. They should be respected. They should have equal justice under law. I believe all those things. In the last few weeks, I've come to understand that Black Lives Matter as a movement is something different than what I perceived it to be. So the statement is one thing, but if you get behind the statement, you're getting behind a political movement. So if you're embracing that, you're embracing certain positions. This is just my observations. Wasn't paying attention to this 3 weeks ago. Right now I'm paying attention to it, talking to lots of people, trying to understand it. But if you embrace it, if you embrace this end, like Stephen Covey talked about, if you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other end of the stick. If you pick a stick up off the ground, right? If you do the action, you get the consequence. Same kind of thing here. Same way, if I embrace Christianity, I'm embracing a number of other positions. Like, what does God respect of me? What is man? What should I or should I not do? Same thing with Black Lives Matter. And more to the point, the opposite is true. So progressives don't give a choice. They will say things like, and I've heard this, if you're not with us, you're against us, or silence equals opposition, and silence equals racism. That's very different than how about half the country defines racism. Now, you may never have been a racist, but if you do not buy this revised definition of racism, by definition, you are a racist. So we're at a very, very strange place. And this is important because right now we're at a free speech issue, and race is the manifestation of the free speech issue. Social justice warriors neither respect objective truth nor free speech. Okay, now objective truth is this: truth exists, it is outside your subjective view of how something works. You may be right or wrong, but objective truth exists. That is true. If I say the wall is not there, and then I walk into it, I will walk into the objective wall that is there. It is not about my perspective or how I feel about it. The wall is there. Now, I recognize that my narrative is not necessarily aligning with the truth. But another view is not right just because it's an alternative to whatever my narrative is. And the social justice crowd tends to talk in terms of narratives, of whose narratives is right or wrong or better or worse or whatever. And this is getting us into some trouble. We're turning ourselves into knots here. Where we are is postmodernism run amok. If we cannot identify truth, then we're left only with raw power. And that means that the most powerful argument wins. We're not worried about truth anymore. And this is a very dangerous place to be. This is why who can shout the loudest becomes important. That becomes essentially what we take as truth, because there's no real truth. Feeling aggrieved does not equal truth. It does mean that you feel aggrieved. It does mean that you might have a legitimate feeling or a legitimate viewpoint, but that feeling aggrieved in and of itself does not equal truth. It just means that this is your subjective experience. So now let's talk about free speech. Liberals used to defend free speech. They would say something nutty and conservatives would scratch their heads and say, that's wrong. And then conservatives would say something that they thought was nutty and liberals would scratch their head and think, that's wrong. But they would say, well, he can say that, but he's wrong. And here's why he's wrong. They would defend your right to speech. Progressives are something altogether different. Liberals used to invoke Voltaire. He didn't actually say this. This was attributed to Voltaire, but the quote is, I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Progressives are nowhere near this. Progressives are shouting down free speech as if words are actual violence. And in what has been called somewhat pejoratively grievance culture or grievance studies, they feel like the people that are being hurt by the words are it their right to not be hurt by words, and it's subjective, whatever they feel it is, overrides your ability to say whatever it is that you're going to say. Now, if you don't go along with this narrative, you're evil. There's no place for dialogue. There's no place for understanding. The philosophy of this movement, it allows no opposition. If you disagree with any point of this doctrine, you are a racist. You cannot object. Now, this is the exact opposite of what you should do in order to learn, grow, find common ground, work through whatever it is that we need to work through. This is toxic, and it is now playing out with real consequences. So, what's happened? In the last week, the New York Times, one of the New York Times editors was fired for publishing an opinion piece by a United States senator because, as a liberal, he thought, I don't like what this Republican senator has to say, so I'm going to hold my nose and I'm going to publish it, but clearly everybody will understand that this is wrong. No, no, no. The progressives see this as a violence against those who might be hurt by it. And so there was an ouster and this guy is gone. We see this thing playing out, and I'm going to go into a number of issues, but we see things that are happening that are hard to imagine. 7 city blocks in Seattle are occupied by rioters, okay? And this is all law-breaking, rioting, taking over a police station, beyond other rioting and looting and other things all across the country. That's in Seattle. We're talking about defunding police departments, which, as an experiment, I say go forward fast and we'll see whether it works or not. But it's amazing that we're talking about this. The show Cops, been on the air for 31 years, and part of this zeitgeist, this anti-police zeitgeist, Cops has been pulled from the air. Live PD pulled from the air. There's even calls for the cartoon Paw Patrol to be removed, to be canceled. Lego, the little like blocks that you play with, are removing Cops from Lego toys. I understand movies like Gone with the Wind are being removed from HBO, which is the irony of ironies because it puts people in a bad light. Megyn Kelly, to her credit, asked, well, what about women being portrayed as sexual objects in movies? Shouldn't that be removed as well? If that was removed, most of Hollywood movies would be removed. But we're only looking at one dimension. We're not looking at the whole picture. And again, the spirit of the age, the zeitgeist, is what's driving this. And it's a very, very dangerous thing. We're tearing down statues. Dozens of Civil War statues are being torn down. Crimes are being committed. You would go to jail for this in normal circumstance to do this kind of thing. Oh, but what we're undoing the systemic oppression. If you really are in a democracy, vote. Don't commit a crime. So are you aggrieved? Sure, but follow the process. I have no love lost for Confederate generals. I grew up in New Jersey. I don't have a dog in that fight, but this is the wrong way to do it. In Portsmouth, they're tearing down a statue last night. Actually, part of the statue fell on someone and injured them as they were tearing it down. Portsmouth City Council was going to decide what to do about that statue on July 28th, but the mob can't wait. And I say the mob, and that puts me on one side of this spectrum, but I'm telling you, that is a mob. It's by definition a mob. It's crime. It's riots. It's wrong. It's illegal. No, you can't condone this. They defaced the Shaw Memorial to honor the 54th Massachusetts, which is insane because this was the first black regiment in the Civil War. The 54th Memorial was defaced. How nutty is that? Now, this made me think of George Orwell. George Orwell had this amazing quote in 1984, every record has been destroyed or falsified, every book rewritten, every picture has been repainted, every statue and street building has been renamed, every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day, minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. Now, a big difference between what Orwell was saying and what's going on here is that was the government, not the culture. But the culture is doing 1984 right now. And they mean well. They're trying to do the right thing, but they're doing it blindly, asserting their viewpoint and arguing that any other viewpoint is illicit. I'm also right now reading the Gulag Archipelago. Solzhenitsyn, it's huge volumes. And Solzhenitsyn was arrested for a letter, and this is in Soviet Russia. He was arrested and sent to jail for a letter where he made some disparaging comments about the regime. Well, you know, I think we're not all that far from that kind of thing. If you're making disparaging comments about Black Lives Matter, people are getting removed from jobs left and right. I mean, look, I wonder how, if a transcript of this is posted on Facebook, how long would it take before it was called fake news? I really wonder that, because I've seen like just funny memes start to be called that. People are losing their livelihoods now for not supporting Black Lives Matter on social media. Just not supporting Black Lives Matter. I'm not saying that they're saying the KKK is great. They're not saying that, okay? Or go Nazis or whatever. They're not saying that. They're not saying our group is better or the superior race or anything. No, not that. But because they're not saying Black Lives Matter is good and affirming that, they're losing their jobs. I already talked about the editor of the New York Times. In Philadelphia, Stan Wyszynowski, I don't know if I am pronouncing that correctly, was a top editor over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He was recently forced to resign because he had a headline of an architecture column that read, Buildings Matter Too. Just for saying that, he was ousted at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Some NBA announcer was fired because he was on a talk show, a sports talk program, and he was fired and resigned from the Sacramento Kings because he tweeted, "All lives matter," which is objectively true. I get that it's a little tone deaf given the present circumstances, but there's nothing like go Klan about that. There's nothing like that. A UCLA professor was placed on leave after he didn't give black students the right to go out and protest. No, you have to come take your exams. The administration had just issued instructions to him saying carry on business as usual. And so he was doing what their job was to carry on business as usual. And he's now on administrative leave. This stretches as far as Britain. A counselor in Britain questioned a county hall being lit in purple in order to support Black Lives Matter. And now he has to defend himself against accusations of racism. This is in Britain. Again, if you don't think that Black Lives Matter is a movement, not just a statement, this is what's going on, and these are real consequences. Some people don't think anything about racism. They're not considering racism. They treat other people justly, which is the definition of justice. They render to every man his due. And so they're not, you know, running around being racist. But Racism 2.0's definition is that if you are not actively talking about this or actively working through this, as the progressives describe, then you are part of the problem. You are a racist. And you know, it reminded me of a line from Douglas Brinkley, who was talking about how, you know, we can't say what we knew to be true up until yesterday. Like not yesterday, but, you know, just a little, you roll back the clock just a little bit, and people didn't think at all like the progressives are thinking right now. And that was perfectly normal way of understanding the world. And so now when you come with your new view of the world, now you have to strong arm people into seeing it that way. Let's have a conversation instead of just yelling names. Now, I would also like to say to progressives, just because you're on the smooth end of the pitchfork right now does not mean that it won't be turned around at some point when culture turns. So no one should want this abuse, because it can go both ways, and there probably will be some backlash, and nobody's going to like that. If you don't believe me about this, things that I'm telling you here, please understand that I'm not making this up. Look at things on your own. I was watching a YouTube video about cancel culture. You know, with cancel culture is everything from when you unfriend me on Facebook because you don't like my political position, to canceling cops or canceling Paw Patrol or whatever. I was watching this YouTube video on cancel culture. It was put up in September of 2019. It was at Harvard, and it was the speaker was from the National Coalition Against Censorship. Okay, this organization, they defend Drag Queen Story Hour. That is where they have drag queens dress up in drag and go to a library and read children's stories to children so that they can kind of acclimate children to transgender or drag queen culture or whatever else, and they can kind of acclimate them to it. Okay, so that's where this lady comes from. But she said she's seeing more attacks from the left. These people believe that free speech actually, the progressives actually believe that free speech perpetuates systemic oppression. Okay, so you can't have free speech. We can't have a dialogue because that holds the system in place. You simply have to overrun it. And she quotes author in The Guardian who says this, quote, "The purpose of the free speech crisis myth is to guilt the people into giving up their right of response to attacks and to destigmatize racism and prejudice. It aims to blackmail good people into ceding space to bad ideas, even though they have a legitimate right to refuse." Okay, so we all believe in the right to protest. Nobody's doubting that. But cancel culture is intentionally designed to delegitimize voices and deplatform people, because some voices, they say, really should not be heard. Let's say that that's true. It would have to be a far, far more extreme thing before they should not be heard, like pedophilia is great, something like that. But right now, if you just are not subscribing to everything that comes attached to Black Lives Matter, that doesn't mean you're delegitimized, but that's what's going on. So she gave a number of examples where artists and authors were opposed by this crowd. And it was really sad because they were being shut down and not allowed to have their free speech, being told that they can't actually perform their art because they're not of a certain group, which is, I mean, that's racism right there. I know some people will say, no, you can't have racism because you only can have racism if you're the person in power. No, that's racism. It's bigotry. If I'm delegitimized because of my people group, that's bigotry. That's racism. I don't care what you call it. It's the same stuff. Okay. The funny thing about this is the artistic kind of community, these people were all essentially making statements about the left. I mean, trying to, you know, bolster statements on the left. The art community, they used to have Pissed Christ. Pissed Christ was a crucifix in a jar of urine that received $20,000 from the federal government, from the National Endowment for the Arts. So they can do that, and they can do that to people of faith like me, who I'm aggrieved by that, but it doesn't matter because my opinion doesn't matter, nor do millions of others' opinion. I'm not saying just because I'm aggrieved that you can't do something. I wish you wouldn't do that, and I certainly don't want the federal government paying for that. But that's essentially what's going on in the other direction. Ironically, most of these artists, again, were supporting the left-leaning narratives, but someone decided that they didn't have the right to speak. Authors now will not speak because pressure is put on publishers not to publish. And the author, or the speaker here at Harvard, said this, and this was, again, this was back in September, has nothing to do with the riots now. Everything I'm talking about, by the way, right now, has nothing to do with race. It has to do with free speech. And race is just one manifestation of what is going on. So the speaker ended with these three fears. She said, one, self-censorship. Self-censorship is important. Why is self-censorship important? I see this on Facebook right now. I see this people that are afraid to speak. But we have to dialogue in order to get to the root of what it is that's wrong between us. Two, lack of experimentation due to fear of reprisal. Fear of reprisal is just a power play as opposed to actually hashing things out like we need to. It's exactly the opposite reaction from where we need to go. And then three, calls for regulation. And we're starting to see those even now. Now, if you care about free speech, you must oppose this. I don't mean opposing Black Lives Matter. I do mean opposing people being shouted down that you must be X because you said this, or you didn't say Black Lives Matter, or whatever it is. It doesn't matter what the it is. What matters is that you preserve free speech and the right to free speech. I'm not saying that you should welcome racism in any shape or form. However, I am saying that if you cannot have a conversation, interact with opposing viewpoints, engage with others, then we're lost. We're simply lost. This matters beyond racism. Racism is only how the matter is presenting. but it is a deeper issue about how and if we can communicate with each other, or if it all devolves to power plays. In a few months, this may be about another topic entirely. It probably will be about another topic, but you must defend the right to speak. Okay, I've said my piece. I'm going to end with a quotation for contemplation. And if you want to correct me or show me how I'm wrong or whatever, feel free to contact me at Darren Gurdis on Twitter. And I'm making that public. You can talk to me about it, tell me how much you despise me or hate me or protest me or whatever on Twitter. Feel free. You're welcome to do that. I approve of you having the right to speak. Okay, here's our quotation for contemplation. Quote, "To suppress free speech is a double wrong. It violates the right of the hearer as well as those of the speaker. It is just as criminal to rob a man of his right to speak and hear as it would be to rob him of his money." Frederick Douglass.